Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, this is the episode where we have no agenda.
That's right. We were just sort of rambling before the call and before the recording, and I think we're going to just keep rambling now that we have the now that we're on the air.
As soon as he got on the call, I said, "Brian, how about you just talk the entire time because my brain is fried?"
And I said, "I was like, well, I've got nothing to talk about, so I was hoping that you would do most of the talking." But yeah.
But we started rolling, came up with a few things. I got MicroConf on my mind, to be honest. I'm ready. I'm really excited. I'm really excited this year.
I'm excited. We have another trip before MicroConf. The family, we're going down to Florida to get a little bit of beach time in before everything else. And then this past week, I feel like I talked about it last week, how I'm shifting gears from, I kind of stopped working on Sunrise KPI.
How's it going? The shift?
Well, just first of all, on Sunrise, it did get a bunch of new customers, paying customers yesterday. I was like, okay, that's nice, but I'm still focusing on Process Kit. But yeah, it's that shift where it's like, it's such a mindset thing where you've got to like stop working on one big project and start working on another big project, but it's not even really starting. It's sort of like picking up where I left off because I did a lot of work on Process Kit last year. One day this week, I cracked open the code and started to refamiliarize myself with that. And then I cracked open the design files and Sketch and I started reworking things there. And everything just feels slow and I feel very unproductive. And then I started doing other things. Like I started working on maybe switching my bookkeeper and just organizing things accounting wise for 2019. I got my taxes all sorted out with my accountant this week. And like, you know, just like housekeeping stuff. And I kind of feel like that's good because it's like in between. It's like an in-between week for me. So it's sort of like take care of the housekeeping stuff. But I still feel a little bit like shit every day when I'm like, what did I really get done today? And like, did I really push toward any goal? Not really. I don't know.
You have to pick momentum back up. I know I hear it from our tech team where they always insist, like, do not make a developer stop in the middle of something and address something else, because to get back into it is much more complicated than it is for me to get back into writing an email I was in the middle of. So it sounds like you're experiencing that, but on a larger scale, because you worked on it for weeks and weeks and then took weeks and weeks off. So don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and also just like the skill set, right? Like I've been jumping from marketing, and then I spent about a month or two on just code with Sunrise. And then now I'm getting back into Process Kit, which is sort of like back to design. And I'm like, I literally need to like refamiliarize myself with like how to do the shortcuts in Sketch and stuff like that. And like, you know, and I feel slow because it's like I need to spend time learning stuff and maybe relearning some stuff that I hadn't touched in a couple of weeks. And
you have to start thinking about the problem from different angles again, and the user and the use case. The best thing that works for me in getting back into that mindset on the use case, the user, the problems, I just go pen and paper. I harbor these like fantasies of being very product focused, and I'm generally not as much as I want to be, but every once in a while, I feel like I understand the problem better than anyone else. Like this big new feature we're releasing in landing pages, like I just sketch it up, not so much in the expectation that that's what ends up in the app, but to convey this is what I would want as a user, as a merchant, and how I would think about it and where it fits into the context. So I don't know, what do you have like a certain thing you do? You jump right into Sketch?
I'm not a big pen and paper person at all. I always wanted to be, but I'm not. So I do all of my literally just like preliminary sketching, like in Sketch. I used to do it in Balsamic, but now I'll do like very rough sort of wireframes in Sketch, and then I'll do more detailed stuff in Sketch. And this week, see what happened was back in 2018, like summer, fall 2018, like after the initial sketching stuff, then I did high resolution, like very detailed screenshots of what Process Kit will look like. And I intentionally put like all of the features, all of the ideas into those screenshots, certainly not intending to build all that stuff from the start, but like I wanted to create these screenshots that I could show the early access people to get their feedback on like the general direction. I do have a pretty clear vision on what the product should be and probably will be, but I'm getting their feedback on, do they understand this idea and which areas are making sense, which areas might be unnecessary, how do I prioritize and things like that. So I got a lot of that good feedback. And now this week, I need to start planning, what am I actually going to build? Out of all that, call those screenshots like 100%. I only want to build 20% or 30% and call that the version one. I actually want to start redesign. Like, I started redesigning some of these screens in Sketch to be like a simpler. If the app only includes that 20 or 30%, what should that design look like?
Oh, that's funny. So the first iteration is actually in between the, let me just get these screens out to show people. And then before you even start coding, you're already making the first iteration.
Yeah, like I did start coding some of the baseline architecture last year. I haven't picked that back up yet. But right now I'm like getting ready to go get back into the code. But before I do, I want to make sure I have all like the basically like the style guide all squared away and which features I'm going to try to build in this first version. Or I think it'll be more than an MVP, but it'll be like a version one. Won't be feature complete by any means, but you know, I looked at the designs from last year. I'm like, these can be cleaner and simpler, and you know, so I'm taking some time on that.
All right. Well, hopefully by this time next week, your brain is moving in that direction, and you don't feel the cobwebs to the same degree. Cool. Well, on my end, I have had what I would call a challenging week. I don't even know what to call it. It's been a week. So it got kicked off last week on Friday, when we did that WACUS meeting. Remember I talked about the what our customers are saying meeting, okay? I think we recorded right before that. So that meeting kicked off a crazy few days. And I made a few mistakes along the way. I made a mistake in the meeting, and then I made a mistake over the weekend, and then I spent all week correcting it. So here's what I mean by that. So that meeting is intended for everyone to hear about what our customers are actually saying. The intention is to make sure that we're customer focused, and more practically, that the success and support teams that interact with customers every day are conveying to the people who don't interact with customers every single day, all day, what's really what's going on, what the temperature's like, where the satisfaction level is, where the heat is, where the feature requests are, and so on. Now, I have been sequestered to a degree from customers, right? I used to do all the support myself. I used to do all the sales myself. Now I do neither. So it is not a normal day that I'm talking to customers. That does not happen every day now. And I'm off doing my job. So this meeting brought a lot back in terms of the volume, just what people want, what they're happy about, what they're not happy about. So here's the first mistake I made. The first mistake I made was the meeting started off on a negative note. And I should have immediately understood that that's not healthy. For us to go have a meeting and talk for an hour and have it be really negative is not okay.
You know, just real quick on that, I'm guessing what you mean is like it started off by like some members of your team be like, well, these are the things that people are sort of complaining about, or these are the things that are tricky. I mean, I've seen the same thing in audience ops where it's like we have managers meetings, but I don't really go to them anymore. But whenever I would go to those, and they're about every 2 weeks, the only things that get talked about are the problem, the complaining clients and the things that are sort of breaking down, and like, what is it? Like the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Like that's what you hear about. That's like the first thing that comes to mind for everyone. It's like, this is an opportunity to voice some things and make things better. So let's just talk about the bad shit.
Yes. And the nature of the support role is it's not often that people reach out and say, hey, Jim, just so you know, I love you and you're awesome. Like that's not the norm.
Yeah. The reason why people reach out is because they have a problem.
Okay. So instead of nipping that in the bud and really understanding, like, let me reorient this meeting toward a more balanced approach. The truth is, the more accurate view of our product is that it has gotten infinitely better black and white, 180 degrees. I don't even know all the ways to say that it's gotten much, much, much better. Q4 was ridiculous. Q4, everything boomed. We were doing $2 million a day in processing and just quiet on the support front. Stable infrastructure. And reverse that, you know, 12 months prior to that was, whoa, it was fear. It was consumed by fear at all times that everything was going to fall apart. So that is the more accurate, balanced view. Yes, we have problems. And yes, we are far, far better. So we should carry a confidence. And in that meeting, it should be balanced. It should be, here's what people like, here's what people don't like, here's what they want, here's what people are thinking. These are the things that they're talking about in the future where they want us to go. And instead, it devolved into an hour of negativity.
Was it like customer support people or was it sales people talking about it?
We don't have salespeople. It was mostly support, and it is a great opportunity for them to voice what they're seeing and hearing. And it's important. And it's important for me to hear. Okay, so that's what happened. It turned into an hour of negativity, and that it drained morale, and it kind of, you know, it didn't feel good for anyone. And for me, it's always very tough.
Because there's all this shit that you haven't even been watching.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It makes you question yourself, like, whoa, do I actually have a feeling for what's going on right now? That sent me into a spiral of, I don't feel like I know exactly what's going on. So I went a little negative, and it's dangerous for me to be negative because I'm out selling the dream of this company to partners, big customers, investors, potential acquirers. Like, that's my job, right? Like new employees. And you can feel it off me when I'm feeling confident and high about everything. And that's the magnet part. That's the, whoa, these people are onto something. Like, I want to be involved in this. So it's, you don't want to mess with that too much. But at the same time, you can't be looked at as the boss that doesn't know what's going on. That's dangerous too. And so I kind of just swallowed that for the rest of the day. Then over the weekend, we had a support incident. And I responded emotionally in Slack. I basically said something to the effect of, man, why does this keep happening? Like a bit of despair in my voice. And then some of the leadership was like, yo, Jordan, that's not helpful. So then I went even more negative. Then I got on calls with the exec team over the weekend, was like, I need to understand what's going on here. Like, am I wrong? And they were like, look, buddy, you got the wrong idea from that meeting. Like, things are infinitely better. Things are kind of great. Revenue's never been higher. Process revenue's amazing. Stability, features, everything's faster. Like, you need to like get a grip here. You can't do that. I was like, whoa, I screwed up. So on Monday morning, I'm dropping my kid off. You know, I drop my kid off and then I come to the office. I drop the kid off and in my head, I'm like, all right, what needs to be said right now? So I come up with my speech in my head and I get into the office. I'm like, all right, everybody get around. Come on. And then I give my speech. And the gist of the speech was, we need to hold two conflicting ideas at the same time and continue to function, right? The F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, right? The mark of a great intellect is the ability to hold two conflicting ideas in your mind at the same time and still function. So that we need to look at both. We need to say, this is remarkable what we are doing. This little room full of people are on track to process $500 million this year. It's phenomenal. But at the same time, we also need to look at the fact that it's not good enough yet. It's not done. There's a work in progress. There's still a lot to do, all that. But we have to have the balanced approach to it. And the way I put it was, the difference between those two, the this is amazing and this is not good enough, the difference between those two is faith. Right? It is your faith in the team, in the mission, in the product, and in the company, in that order, in the ability to close the gap between the two. And then what I tried to telegraph was, it's never going to be at the same point. It's never going to be perfect, because even as it gets closer, what are we going to do? We're just going to take the goalpost and put it beyond the horizon again.
Yeah, it's never finished.
Yes. And then we'll just keep doing it again and work our way closer toward reality and again and again and again. And that helped set the tone for this week on, okay, let's keep that balanced approach. And then the rest of the week proceeded to be a roller coaster that tested all of those things. So Wednesday, we had a big blow up with one of our partners, one of our most integration partners. The integration has been causing pain on both sides. So we've had like a come to Jesus, like, whoa, we really like this partnership. Well, we got to redo this integration. We got to do whatever it takes to fix it. Because both teams, like I talked to the CEO, who's a friend of mine, and both of us are like, my team currently hates your product because it causes them so much work internally. So that was difficult to kind of deal with. And now Friday, I'm emotionally, pew, I'm spent. I'm all done now. But the good thing, at some point during the week, I was full of stress. And at some point, it almost started turning into like comedy. You're like, yeah, this is just ridiculous. I've done this. Fucked. Yeah, I'm going to be alive at the end of the day. It's like, so it was like acknowledging the ability to look right in the face of all that stress and just go, ha, 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 ha. Is this fun? You know, like a bit of a madman, but it felt like, all right, cool. I've done this before. I've seen worse. We're going to get through this too. Let's keep going.
I've definitely felt all of that with audience ops at pretty routine points throughout every year, basically, you know.
The roller coaster analogy is apt because it goes up and down.
Yeah, the thing that always gets me with audience ops, but I guess anything else that I'm not currently really focused on trying to improve and whatnot, like, is that it's something happening over there, and then when I least expect it or when I can't predict it, it just protrudes right into my view. And it's like, oh shit, I was not planning on having to deal with this today, and then it's there. I mean, it just, I think with audience ops, it has come to a point. I'm curious to hear on your end, but like the types of things that rise to the level of getting in front of me have definitely reduced in the last year or two with audience ops. Like, and I think that's a great deal due to the awesome team and the managers that we have. And the fact that they've been on the team for so long that they've seen most of the crap come through and they kind of know how to deal with stuff. But there's definitely still things. I would call it on average, maybe every four to six weeks or so, there's something that's just like, we can't deal with it ourselves. We need Brian's help on this. Or this customer has some issue and like
they need to go to the top. Yep.
Probably needs to go to the top. And then this is something that I still have not solved. But to me, it's like if something comes to my inbox, something probably went wrong. And so anytime I see any email come to my inbox from the team, before I even read it, I'm like, oh fuck.
What's it gonna be? Yeah. Okay.
And so do you have any like filters in place or systems where your team knows, like, we know how to deal with these questions, but if it's a question about X, Y, and Z, that needs to go to Jordan? Like anything like that?
So I do two different things. The one thing I don't do enough of, but I just put on my calendar and like I have it set for Tuesdays and Thursdays, 11:30 to 12, like before lunch. Is like MBWA. I feel like I'm into acronyms lately. Management by walking around. So I just go to someone's desk. Hi, Shauna. What's going on today? You know, and then just kind of like take a glimpse into their day and like how they do things and what tools are they using. And oh, someone, you know, chimes in with a question like, well, what do you do? Are you using a screenshot to explain to them? Like, what else do you need? Like, that seems like you're using eight different tools to answer someone's question. Does that make sense? So just gathering a little bit of the temperature of what's going on.
I'm just going to say, when I used to be an employee at a web agency in New York, I fucking hated that.
I think it depends on how it's done.
Yeah.
It depends. It depends. Yeah. You look, it's just the deal.
It wasn't so much that. It was just the placement of my desk in the room, to be honest. It's so weird how I remember this so clearly. This constant feeling of like uncomfort because it was a small company, like 18, 20 people, and like it was an open room and all of our desks are like against the wall. So like if anybody's walking behind you, they could just see your computer, right? And I remember my desk happened to have been like just perfectly aligned with the boss's office. So like he could at any time of the day, just literally like look out his door and like see straight on into my computer. And just all day long. And like you're there for 8 hours. Like there's no way you're going to work for like there's you're going to take breaks. You're going to check whatever I was checking back then. And like and so it was just always constant. Like I got really good with like keyboard shortcuts and like how to hide shit. And like it was just I just remember this like constant feeling of like, oh.
So I never and I expect it, you know, like, please, you think my screen's on work all day. So, okay. So I try to pick things up. When we're in the kitchen, I try to just ask how things are going, things like that. But the way things filter up to me, my team knows that I just want to know, just tell me what's actually happening. Don't hold it back. And then what I've tried to do is almost never step in. So the other day, you know, Ryan and Emily will come up to me and they'll say, just so you know, we had an issue with Recharge and there are about 3,000 orders that didn't create a subscription and we'll let you know how it goes. And then I just want to convey, this is one of the advantages of being in person because you can convey confidence in them with just the body language and how you respond. Say, okay, well, what's the plan? Okay, you guys got it. Keep me updated. And then I move on with my life and I just want them to know I'm aware of it. Thank you for making me aware of it. I trust you guys to handle it. Go do your thing. And just basically tell me when it's done, more or less.
That's awesome. I mean, that's what I've sort of had over the last year and a half with audience apps. Like a lot of those emails that come to my inbox, yeah, something's not going totally smooth, but a lot of these times, like, it's just my team manager just CCing me just to let me know, like, hey, just letting you know, like, there have been some delays with this client and we've had a back and forth and here's exactly what we're doing about it, but I just want to let you know. I read them. I might do like a thumbs up thing on the message, but like at this point now with audience apps, I'm only stepping in when I absolutely have to, you know, like if I sort of trust the team and the systems enough that it's like you guys can sort of deal with it until it's really like, all right, this is not working.
Right. And you want them to know that you have confidence in them. And what I try to do is I try to add in my two cents, but not how they should be doing their job or the words they should be using and communicating. I just maybe if I see an opportunity to add a little bit of context, like, for example, one of our big customers, the one with the issue over the weekend, he was inappropriately unprofessional, whatever you want to call it, in his response, in the way he handled it. And my team got mad at him and it was an emotional, like, that's not cool for him to do what he did. Okay. So in that situation, what I add in is I say, guys, don't forget, he's an employee and he's real stressed because we all know that his boss is tough to work with. And you have to understand his point of view. He's going to make sure that he does not get blamed for this type of thing. And so his reaction is in that context. So I feel you and just kind of keep that in mind. So maybe that's something that I'll add in that might be a little difficult for them to look at in the same way while they're in the moment. So it's just trying to be helpful or something, but not get in the way.
Yep.
Yep. What else, man?
Let's see. What else? This is probably kind of boring, but let's just for a quick minute. I guess I'm kind of curious about how some other people handle their bookkeeping. So this week I almost switched bookkeepers and I ultimately went back to the one that I've been using for the last 3 years or so. I thought some things were going to change like structurally in my business. So I thought this would be a good time and it's January, 2019. So I was like, this might be a good time to think about switching bookkeepers. So I went over to Bench. I had been looking at Bench for forever. We all know, yeah, it's probably like the most popular bookkeeping service out there right now for people in our world. And I like everything that I see there based on, and they price it based on your expenses, the level of your expenses, right?
And the number of accounts you connect, something like that.
Yeah, they have an extra charge if you have like 15 plus accounts. Right. To connect. I'm below that, so there shouldn't be any extra for that. But I'm definitely in one of their higher tiers because we have a lot of expenses with audience apps. And so I knew that going in. You could see that just from their pricing page. And my thing is that I have multiple what I call business units. It's all one LLC, and I ultimately want one P&L for everything. But I need the ability to say, okay, what was audience ops specifically that that revenue and expenses, and
broken out.
And what were the revenue expenses for like Sunrise KPI and even Bootstrapped Web? Like, I have a separate business unit for that, just to make sure that like our editing cost for that is accounted for, and like, oh, and like the productize course, like that's a separate business unit. You know,
so like, you're looking at the P&L for each separately. So you don't want to just see one giant category for software. You want to see how much am I spending on software for audience ops? How much am I spending for software on
exactly
productize?
Yeah. And so like if we have contractors for audience ops, I need that separate from contractors for Bootstrapped
Web. Okay.
You know,
okay. That sounds unique enough where you're probably not going to fit into a bench like service right off the bat.
Yeah. So I was on their like live chat on Bench. I think it was like live chat. And I was like, all right, I think based on my expenses are probably in like their venture plan, whatever they call it. And I was like, but my thing is like, I just need to like a second layer of categorization or tagging or however you want to do it so that we can separate these things. And I was like, can you do that? And they were like, yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. We just need that, you know, you'll be in touch with your bookkeeper so you can sort of sort that out, but we can definitely do that. They said that, right? And then I was like, all right, is that, and just to be clear, like the pricing on that, that's going to be on this pricing plan, like this dollar amount a month. And they're like, yep. And that's already a bit more than what I've been paying my bookkeeper. I just work with a freelance bookkeeper who basically manages my Xero account. And I'm not even a fan of Xero. I don't even touch it. She just handles it. And I just see my income statements every month from her. So I knew I was going to be spending maybe about $100 more than that. But I was like, yeah, let's see what Bench is all about. It might be a little bit more efficient, more easy for me to manage and whatnot. So then I sign up and they give you like a one free month as like a free trial. They'll do your free trial month. I did that, or I signed up for that. And then you have to like book a kickoff call. And I did that like 3 days later. And then I get on the call. The thing takes like a half an hour. I was basically planning on using Bench at this point. And then on the call, like, oh, by the way, yeah, because you need to do those separate things, like we need to charge an add-on for that. I just checked with my bookkeepers. I'm like, really? Like, we talked about this.
Right. They, you know, they mismanage your expectations.
I don't know. It just seems pretty obvious that the sales guy is just working on some sort of commission where it's just like get people like signed up for the free trial and then get them in, and it's like just tell them whatever they need to hear to get them in there. And it's like, I'm sure Bench service is great and it seems really great, to be honest.
I've used them.
Yeah. And like, it's just something like that. And I feel like that has happened to me a few different times in the last couple of months when I'm considering buying something and the salesperson is just not upfront about some key details like price or like how things work or, you know.
It might also just be a communication thing where the person you chatted with is not the same person that you're on the call with.
I think it was the same person, same name and everything. It was like
incentives get weird on sales.
I know we've been talking about sales a lot, but like there were also like in the conversation, like while I was talking to him, he was like, yeah, we could do that. Yeah, no problem. And then I'm like, just to be clear, like Bench will be doing the tagging and the categorizing, like not me every month. He's like, well, if you just do it once, then it won't be a problem. And then like a few more rounds of that, I start to realize like what he's hinting at is like, no, Brian, you will be the one tagging everything every single month. You know, and I was like, well, no, that like the whole point is to outsource it. And it's like, and he just kept saying yes, yes, yes. And I'm like, but just to clarify, you're not saying yes. You're like, and I was like, all right, this is just ridiculous. I gotta go.
Yeah, this is tough. I mean, that sounds like a bad experience that was unnecessarily bad. If they had been upfront with you and you knew going in that it would cost extra, but that they would do it for you, I think you're more likely to say yes. Even if they had gotten you to say yes in the moment, you would be walking into that relationship with a bad taste in your mouth. The hard thing that I think about is when I hear that, I think about, oh, the manager of that salesperson and the manager of that manager are going to look at it as a positive thing if they got you to pay another $100, but they're not going to know what it did to the relationship. As we're thinking about hiring sales for the first time, this is what I'm thinking about, all these different things. It's like the incentives with sales starts to come in conflict with the way you want your customers to feel and the business itself. And that's kind of scary. How do you align it?
And I've struggled with this with audience ops, or the thing that I'm struggling with is letting go of sales, because sales is the thing that I'm still doing. It's like the only job that I still have in audience ops is doing the sales calls. A couple years ago, I did put somebody into the sales role, and I think generally he did a pretty good job, but it was my failure to like the incentives. Like I was basically paying him like commissions for every closed sale, which as much as I train him and whatnot, like it's still his natural, it would be anyone's natural inclination to just close the sale because it's going to be an extra whatever dollars. Mm-hmm. And like with me, the way that I sell is I'm literally pushing back the whole, like I'm just like, just to be clear, these are the expectations. You're going to see your first article after this many weeks, and we're going to have some back and forth. And like, I just want to let you know, like this is, and that thing you're asking for, like, yeah, we don't really do that. I want to be clear about that.
You're,
like
you're under promising.
I'm giving them like as clear as possible expectations. And I'm just there to sort of answer their questions, you know? And like, or like I'm asking questions of them and just get them talking and let them sort of guide themselves, you know?
Yeah, we've been thinking internally about how to handle it. And the idea that we're going to hire people that, right, the people who are here now, especially the people who've been here for a while, they're ride or die, man. They've seen some shit. They have dealt with a lot of pain and small office and whatever else. And then the idea that we're just going to hire someone who can talk to people and then they're going to start to make commission and make more money than everyone else is like, that's weird too. That's weird. But so what do you do? Then you do share commission all along the line? Like there's a reason companies don't do that, because I don't know if that really works.
That's the other thing that I struggle with is like, is it, because a lot of, right now, almost all the leads are inbound organic, you know? So it's like, how do you pay a commission on somebody who all they do is take an inbound call, you know? Like, I don't understand how to price that or how to pay for that.
Yes. So I'm in the same boat, and I don't know what to tell you. I'm sure we're going to screw it up to a degree, but we'll try to figure it out.
The other thing that I learned through that experience, this was like about 2-3 years ago now, when I had somebody doing the sales, is he closed a bunch of sales. And then 6-7 months later, we had a string of cancellations, like a bat. Like it was the worst dip in audience ops revenue to date. I mean,
and it was lined up with the customers that they closed, because maybe they weren't the ideal customers.
Those expectations, yeah. Like they left within 6 months, and right now our average lifetime is like over a year. You know, so it's like I don't want to make it sound like that person sort of failed. Again, I think it was my failure of like misincentivizing and maybe not following through on the training for long enough and things like that. But like churn and lifetime value all improved since then. And so now I'm like, I would like to get rid of sales off of my plate. I just don't know how to do it, you know?
The thing I try to keep in mind, I my good friend, David Hennemeyer Hansen, right? He's like the good fairy over one of my shoulders. He's like, keeps the sanity in check the way I
that's think why about I it. Chose to learn Rails. I was like, what, I'll do whatever DHH says. Like, I'm cool with that. Like,
mm-hmm. True story. So I think about what he would say is there are no rules. You don't have to go by the rules. Just because every or most of the companies work a certain way, it's not necessarily required that you do that, that you hire people and give them a commission and let them make 250 grand while everyone else, you know, has a relatively normal salary just because they can close deals. And the most important part is it's your business, man. And you need to care about your customers the way you want to. This is not a business. Yeah, we've raised money and all that, but this is not a business that like doesn't care about their customers. We just want to grow. It doesn't matter. And we either get acquired or we hit a wall. Like that's not it. So I try to think like, no, everything's open. The design space on a company is blank. You can create whatever kind of company you want with whatever incentives. That was one of the things we looked at our sales process and we were drawing it on the whiteboard and we started talking about commission. I was like, I just want to share commission across the whole company. Otherwise, we're going to get into a situation where we're not cheering for each other.
I actually like that. I mean, I really like that about like sharing commission.
Everyone plays a role.
Because everyone does play a role. I mean, I think customer support plays maybe more of a role than anyone, to be honest.
I agree. And, I mean, and success and the onboarding and it's and marketing that got them there to begin with.
And dev, I mean, it's the product. Like,
I don't see how it's disconnected.
Yeah.
And you know, the focus for us lately
has been... I guess at the end of the day, that's like profit sharing, basically, right? Like,
yeah, but maybe profit sharing is healthier. Maybe that's better because that ties everything in. It ties keeping a check on expenses and not spending unnecessarily. And it connects, yeah, let's just do a grocery run every week on the company. It connects, hey, I'm spending money that's partly my money also and not just this imaginary thing called a company.
Whenever I seek advice or look for advice on team-related stuff with Audience Ops, I've set it up. It's a productized service and we have a team of mostly freelancers who ramp up and ramp down as their workload ramps up and ramps down, you know, namely the number of clients that they're working on. And so I feel like that has like just made a lot of the common advice just not applicable or, you know.
I challenge that though. You could just make it up. Just make it up. Right. Like what I'm saying right now is effectively dividends. It's not that my investors wouldn't be okay with it, but that seems a bit counter to, you know, what we told the investors we're doing. We're not taking dividends out, we're reinvesting. So if you, at least for my situation, if you call it commission, it's easier than profit sharing at the end of the quarter, at the end of the year, right? Nathan Barry's got a private company with no investors as far as I know or I can tell. So that is, he could do whatever he wants. I have some constraints, but it doesn't mean I can't do it.
Yep. If you're paying for salespeople like incentives or commissions, what about like they don't get the commission for 6 months or 8 months or something like that? Like, and so then they're more incentivized to like create long-term customers.
Yes, yes. And this is directly related to a conversation you and I got involved in on Twitter with Derek Reamer. I don't think we were disagreeing so much. We, the language, you know, Twitter, like one word off and you think you're disagreeing with someone, but you're really talking about the same thing. But we were talking about sales. Derek was talking about the role of sales, right? He's coming at it as a developer. I'm going to find this thing.
Yeah. I was just looking for it. What I remember was, and we'll try to link it up in the show notes, but what I remember was like, Derek had sort of like a thread of tweets and I basically agreed with all of them and up until one where it was just sort of the wording. That's where we sort of, you know.
You do the sales for Audience Hop. You're currently in the process of buying a car. So you're interacting with sales. Right. I am hiring salespeople. It's just, you know, it's just present. So what Derek was talking about, I'm learning that there's a wide chasm between recognizing a problem and actually modifying behavior to fix the problem. Products can facilitate that behavior modification, but participants have to be willing to change. So really what he was starting to say is like, that's what sales should do. It should motivate like, oh, I have a problem. My bookkeeping is, you know, I need to improve it, whatever. Then there's a product bench that exists that you can make your, potentially make your bookkeeping better or closer aligned to what you want. And he's saying sales comes in as the motivator
to like
get
motivate
you from what you're currently
to
doing.
Want to start to pay.
To change your behavior for what you're currently doing to something new.
See, which that's sort of where I disagree a little bit. Like, and I get where he's going with it a little bit, but like I was already motivated. Like I've been shopping for a car. I've been shopping for a bookkeeping service both this past week, right? I don't go to car dealerships for the fun of it. I don't think anybody does. You go to a car dealership because you intend to buy a car. You're already motivated before you even step on the lot.
Right. Kind of like you request a demo for Audience Ops or CarHub. You've done your research. The nature of things is you don't need the salesperson to provide you all the information. Like you've done a lot of that research ahead of time.
Yeah. So you've already self-identified that I have a problem. I know that I have a problem. I believe that this company might or probably has the solution. I'm going to book this demo or book this call or go talk to that salesperson because I have questions to confirm my aspirations for this product. right? Like that's the mindset of a buyer, I think, is like they—
Interesting
they,
word, confirm.
Like I'm only going to spend time with a salesperson because I'm coming to the table with questions just to make sure that I am totally clear on what I want to buy and what I'm going to get. And it's their job to say yes or correct my assumptions. And that's sort of how I see it on both sides. Like, and that's what I try to do as a salesperson now is to literally, like, one of the things I say is like, all right, so you've probably seen the demo for Audience Ops. You've checked out our pricing. Like I'm here if you have any other questions. And then we just kind of go through it.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of Ben Ornstein at Tuple. It's not open to the public yet. So he's doing a lot of calls and he's in that same boat. He's answering questions. If he just said yes to everyone, I don't think they would be in as good of a place as if he would say no to a lot of people also, like to make sure, right? Because he had a tweet, I think the same day, talking about something similar where—
Yeah, I think it was like—
Yes, it was like something that keeps happening like they on sales calls for him.
They asked for something that would make it really hard for Tuple, but yes. but he suggested sort of an alternative that would make it easier, and most people say yes.
You know? Yes, right. And if they say no, then it's not the right thing for them. So as we're talking internally here about what type of salespeople, one of the first things that I recognized was that everyone's conception of salespeople is not good. People thought, oh, you're going to have like a few bros in the back of the office, like high-fiving and making more money than everyone else. Like, cool. I guess we need sales. And that's not what we want. Who wants that? That's like, you can understand why the fear is related to that, but we don't want that. But it made me think, okay, what do we want? It's very similar to what you're talking about with what you do with Audience Ops. We just want people to build relationships, provide information, and it's almost more important that they disqualify people.
It's like consultative sales. It's
yes.
Like on Audience Ops, I literally say like request a consultation. That's it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And of course, like people say, like, okay, that's clearly a sales call. But like,
I like that better than demo though. Demo is like, let me show you what I have and try to convince you to buy it, as opposed to let's have a conversation about if this is the right thing for you.
Yeah, because you're consulting. You're saying like, all right, let me, because I generally want to understand like what is it that you're looking for. I mean, Audience Ops is a little bit different because it's very much a productized service. So it's like, we do this. You're probably somewhat sold on what we do.
And I would argue that most software products are actually pretty close to that, that they're really good at doing a very specific set of things.
Yeah, that's the whole idea behind productizing, whether it's software or a service. It's like you're providing one solution to one problem. But if you're like an agency or if you're a car salesman, right? Like so what are you in the market for? You're like a family car or like what's sort of your price range and what are the things that are important to you? Like you want to ask these questions so that the customer can just tell you like what they're trying to achieve. What's the job that they're trying to do? And it's your job to consult with them, be like, well, here's what I would recommend. Like you might not fit with this, but here's something that might check those boxes for you, you know?
Or you've come to the wrong place. The red Lambo you're really after is at the next car dealership.
Yep.
I'm very, not worried, but I acknowledge we need to be really cautious with the first few sales hires. Because we're trying to do two things at the same time. We're trying to cut down the number of people in our system. Right? We talked about churn. It's become pretty obvious that the reason we have high churn is because we let everybody in. We've been looking at it in aggregate. A few hundred people are creating trials. Isn't that amazing? That's so much potential MRR. We can close 30 to 40% of them. Isn't that great? When in reality, it should be how many really qualified prospects are now in the system. If it's 30 that are in the system that are qualified, that's infinitely better than 300 total. Because then the 30 aren't getting the right experience. And they're churning out, and the people that sign up are churning out because it's not right for them. And even worse, the chaos it creates internally all the way down the line, from the success people talking to them, helping them onboard, to the support people answering questions from people who aren't good prospects, to tech and product hearing feature requests from the wrong people. It's like, so I've looked at it and I'm just like, oh, that's just all my fault. That's the way I see it, basically.
I mean, I am curious to hear over the next few weeks, like how, what type of people do you put into those roles, and like do you separate out the demand generation or the prospecting or the booking of the calls to the person who's actually talking to them and then the person who's onboarding them? Like, how do you incentivize each of those steps in the process, you know?
Right. And how do you, yeah. And I'm worried that some salespeople are just going to look at it and say, that does not make sense to me because I want to be incentivized the way I'm used to or the way that I expect to. And I don't know if we're going to end up going in that direction or not. I mean, just off the bat, one of the things we've identified in analyzing the process is we don't need outbound. We don't need outbound right now. The first sales hires will be doing inbound demos and qualifying. And that combined with the initiative of letting in fewer people, that right there is enough to improve things. And we should do that first before we go outbound. So it's almost like, okay, you're a salesperson, you're not going to be going out generating leads and closing deals in that same way. And so does that make sense to compensate as a classic salesperson? I just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of sales, I have lunch with a potential sales hire in 20 minutes.
Hey, there you go. Might get this problem solved by the end of the day.
Yeah. There we go. That'll end the week off the right way.
There you go. Well, I'm going to try to make some meaningful progress on process kit for the next week. Mainly I want to get some, like a new version of at least one of these screens to show the group, and then get back on some calls with some people in this early access group, you know, next week, and get that ball rolling. Cause you know, yeah, like you were saying, MicroConf is right around the corner. I'm starting to look at that as like a marker for like, let me see what I could ship with process kit by then. I mean, I don't think this full version would be ready by then, but I want it to be really pretty close.
You know? I think MicroConf is a better motivator for me than like New Year's.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm thinking about, I'm going to go on a diet, man. I'm getting ready.
That's what I need to do.
All right, dude. Good talk. Happy weekend. Thanks, everybody.
Later.